2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Veterans are who we are, what we talk about, who we fight for. This podcast sheds light on real issues facing our veterans. It informs the uninformed. It celebrates their triumphs and provides hope to those fighting a silent battle. This is Upholding Valor. Welcome. I'm Jill Atwood, Director of Communications for the VA Salt Lake City Healthcare System and your host for Upholding Valor. Our topic today is post-traumatic stress. It affects about 10 to 15% of our veterans, but in talking with my guest today, it could be a lot higher, which we'll get into that. It is not something, if you're listening, that you need to just deal with and live with. It is treatable and it's possible to deal with the trauma and go on to lead an active, engaged life. I also want to dispel the myth that all veterans struggle with this and are violent as a result. We see a lot of that depicted in the media at times, and it simply is not true. So I want to welcome my guest today. I'm so honored to have Elizabeth Scott. She is a psychologist here at VA Salt Lake City with our PTSD team. And we also have Dawn Height, who is an Air Force veteran, retired. She did 21 years. You should be proud of that. And she is struggling with post-traumatic stress or PTSD as a result of her MST experience in the military. For those of you that don't know what MST stands for, it's military sexual trauma. So thank you so much, both of you, for being here. I appreciate it. It's an important topic, and it's a topic that we can't talk about enough. So Elizabeth, I want to start with you. For family members, for veterans who might not be sure, can we talk about the general symptoms of PTSD and how and why it happens?
Yeah, definitely. This is something that I get asked a lot, even just when meeting people and they hear that I work at the VA. They're like, okay, well, how would anybody know if it's, you know, worth getting checked out or if it's something that they might be struggling with? So, you know, the first thing to understand is that PTSD comes from a trauma. And a trauma, specifically, the way that we look at it, you know, with a diagnostic point of view, is something that is life-threatening and that happens in a time-limited situation. It's something like a car accident. It could be natural disaster, sexual trauma, military combat, or sometimes even like traumatic loss. And it can happen to people in lots of different types of ways. So they might directly experience it. They might witness it happen to somebody else, mm-hmm. or they might learn about the details of it afterwards as a part of their job. Like, for instance, if they're a first responder. Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's okay. What does trauma typically look like for a veteran, either a combat veteran or in the case of Dawn, she wasn't in combat. Mm-hmm. What can happen to a soldier and how does this come back to haunt them?
Yeah, the range is huge. And so this is something that we get a lot where people are like, well, I'm not really sure if I have PTSD because mine is related to a friend who died in combat. I didn't see it. I just heard about it and I wasn't there. And even if it's something like that, PTSD can still develop because it's about the way that it affects the way you think about yourself, other people, and the world, right? And these people, even if they weren't there to witness it, they might have thoughts like, well, it was my fault. I should have been there. I should have told them not to go. It should have been me and not them. And these types of thoughts can then limit a person's life where they don't feel like they can relate to people as well. They have a hard time being out in public because intrusions about what happened or what might have happened if they didn't actually witness it, they could be popping in their head from time to time and keeping them from being able to interact and enjoy their life the way that they would like to.
Like flashbacks, nightmares.
Yeah, absolutely. So you asked about symptoms.
Sure.
We break those down into four different groups. So after a trauma, people can experience symptoms like intrusions, and that's like what you just mentioned. So nightmares, flashbacks, sitting out at a restaurant and all of a sudden somebody walks by and you smell something that reminds you of a food that was served on your deployment, and then suddenly you're transported back there and it feels like everything's happening again. Another set of symptoms is avoidance. So people might do things to keep themselves busy. We hear a lot of times people are saying like, oh, well, you know, I just am woodworking all day, but to the point where I've hurt my back and I've cut up my hands because I'm doing this so frequently and for such long periods of time. Or they might engage in overworking to the point where their family members are like, you're never home, you're never around us. There's also avoidance of external reminders, like the triggers that you mentioned.
Sure.
So, driving in a route that takes longer to get to work because they don't want to drive past a construction site or a place where there's kind of a choke point in traffic,
sure.
Things that might remind them of something that happened. And then they also will experience those changes in thoughts and feelings, like it's my fault or I'm not safe anywhere, which can make them feel anxious, alone. And then the last one is one that I think a lot of people come into therapy for is the hypervigilance and the hyperarousal. So kind of constantly scanning, searching, looking for the exits, trying to find a way out, or being really easily startled, jumpy, irritable, maybe even engaging in risk-taking behavior or having a hard time concentrating because your brain's constantly on high alert trying to take everything in.
Sounds overwhelming.
Absolutely.
Is any of this ringing a bell for you?
Oh gosh,
Dawn?
All of it.
Can you tell me a little bit about your story, your service, what you did?
Sure.
And your journey to get through this portion of your life and what you're struggling with.
Sure, absolutely. And thank you for having me.
Yeah,
I appreciate
thank you.
It. So I'll kind of start a little bit earlier in my life. My childhood wasn't as great, loving environment. There was some childhood abuse and traumas. So that's kind of a start for my path. And I had a little bit of therapy from that, but wasn't as effective. Joining the military was the first time I had left the state of Florida. I grew up in a very small rural area. So I went to Germany at 20. And first time away from home, first time away from everything. It was amazing.
Right.
My job was in the fire department. My first year in Germany with the fire department, I was one of 250 guys. And they just weren't set up for women at the time. It was the
sure.
late 90s. And you know, they didn't have a bathroom. They didn't have a bedroom for me. So a lot of changes had to occur because they wanted to introduce women into these other jobs and other careers. So that's where I started. And my first event occurred my first year in the military. So yeah, first year, it was difficult and confusing mm-hmm. because you join the military to be taken care of and to be part of something bigger and greater. And wow, it was just, it was unusual. So worked through that or tried my best to work through it, started getting what I realize now was a lot of medical issues from it.
Right.
Fast
you
forward.
Internalize things
oh,
so
yeah.
much and it manifests.
Oh, and you're told, don't tell, because you're the one that caused this. It's your fault.
Were you really told that?
Oh, God, yes. Many times.
So you went to report or talk about what was happening and it was downplayed?
Oh, it wasn't. I was advised not to report.
Okay.
And if I wanted a career.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So I was one that if I could sign up at 20, if I could have signed my initiation papers for 20 years, I would have done that.
Mm-hmm.
That's how committed I was to this Air Force. And yeah, when you're told that, you're like, oh my gosh, you know, this just happened to me. I don't know what to do. I don't have anybody to protect me. I'm in Germany in another
sure.
country. What do we do? And then you're being told, don't tell, because it's your fault. You mm-hmm. caused this. You crossed the line. I was younger ranking
yeah.
than this individual, which that seem to occur as higher ranking compared to the lower ranking. I was able to move to another base. And then my third base, I had another experience with military sexual trauma.
Mm-hmm.
and
Were these superiors?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
One was enlisted. One was a civilian. And we worked in the fire department, and we had to stay there at night.
Sure.
But they didn't have locks on the doors. That wasn't allowed either. I'm not sure why, but... So many medical issues started happening. So many more things. Went to the doctor. I had stomach issues. I couldn't go to the bathroom. I couldn't sleep. They gave me Ambien, gave me these pain pills, some other pain pills. So much was happening. Just so many weird signs and symptoms coming up with my health. And I just never realized that was because of the traumas. So much of that was occurring. I went to the doctors and they gave me the personality adjustment disorder, which is the number one disorder they give for people who have experienced military sexual trauma.
Is that accurate?
Yeah, adjustment disorder is really commonly given when you're in the military. And it's a name of a disorder that I don't think fully encapsulates what it actually is. It sounds like you're having a problem adjusting to something that you should be able to adjust to, which is just not what's actually happening,
right?
And I think part of the reason why they give adjustment disorders is because it's a stressor that's still ongoing,
right?
Which is really, really tricky. That like PTSD, the blessing of that is that the trauma has ended.
Yeah.
With an adjustment disorder, it means that it's still something that you're having to deal with, whether it's sexual assault or just chronic sexual harassment, which has huge, huge negative effects on your feelings of safety, trust, power and control, esteem, intimacy, all of the things that we look at with PTSD treatment. And so, it's like it underrepresents the distress and the trauma of what people who experience military sexual assault have to deal with. And I think the purpose of the title is to acknowledge that this is still something that's happening, that it has not ended, which is just so devastating.
Yeah.
So you kept suppressing and just moving forward because your career in the Air Force was important to you.
Yeah, and it came to a point where these medical issues actually disqualified me from being a firefighter. So the major depression, the anxiety, not sleeping, not performing, and then, of course, they would come up with pelvatory inflammatory or pelvic inflammatory disease because of all the issues.
Sure.
But never once was asked. Mm-hmm. Never.
Did you ever offer that information?
No.
Right.
No. Because I knew it was disqualifying. I was already having problems adjusting. So what they did, they actually retrained me, because once I became disqualified with all those signs and symptoms and diagnoses, they retrained me into a different job, into public health, where I stayed the rest of my career. But through that rest of that career, so many times that these traumas keep coming back up and these signs and symptoms just kept coming back, and I would just push them down.
Yeah.
Or it got to the point where I tried to hide it and lie. No, everything's fine. I'll get to that project, or I forgot to do the project, or whatever. I would just lie, so I would get in more trouble. And it's so common. When I'm looking back, I look back on all the people I supervised, like, oh, I could have missed something that they were going through because I missed it myself.
Well, and just to have to go through that change because of your trauma, you identified yourself as a firefighter, probably loved it. And then on top of all your trauma, you have to transition into a new career field, which is always challenging when you're stressed to begin with. At what point, either in the military or after you retired, did it just become too much when you realized you needed some serious help with this?
Well, at one point, the first time they'd given me the diagnosis of PTSD, I actually fought with the military psychologist. I was like, there's no way you're giving me that diagnosis. I did not go to combat. I didn't get shot at. You're not going to take that from those people. Give it to me.
Aww.
So it took a lot of convincing.
That's okay. You're very similar to many humble veterans when it comes to disability ratings and getting help and receiving monetary disability.
It's difficult, still. But he convinced me. It was my career, or I go to an in-residential PTSD program in Cincinnati.
So you did this while you were still in?
Oh, still active duty, which was so...
Which is
difficult and so unusual.
Yeah, that's pretty rare.
It was. But he was, it was a new program they were starting for a lot of people. It just happened to be that I could go and attend this with so much I had, and he knew it wasn't going to come out. These traumas were not coming out of my mouth.
Right.
It did not matter what happened. They were never coming out because that's my career, that's my pride, and
yeah,
and you don't want that coming out either because you're looked at as a stigma. It's your fault. But he sent me to the course, and it was great. It was a good course. It, mm-hmm. it taught me cognitive behavioral therapy, which is another process that we can use.
Sure.
So it was good for the time, and it helped me for the next couple years until something else happened. I was triggered again. Mm-hmm. Something else came up, and it just was more than I could take, and either I would get in more trouble or I would just be so depressed or mm-hmm. overwork or hypervigilant or just, it was so many things going on. It wasn't until a year before I retired, the stress had gotten so bad. I actually had two, I guess what they kind of called a pre-heart attack. Mm-hmm. So supraventricular tachycardia just really got me where they had to give me meds to stop the heart twice. And, shock me twice. So stress really does a lot.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
So you retire. Mm-hmm. Do you medically retire or you just decide
no.
I've had enough and it's time?
That's what had happened. Okay. When I had that diagnosis, the way it is, it was a disqualifying factor for the military.
Okay.
So they were going to medical board me. And I said, nope, I'm going to retire on my own. So I was able to submit the paperwork. Before they could medically retire me. So I was able to retire on my own. And
well, you are proud.
Very
you are.
Proud and stubborn and
right.
defiant.
You needed that documentation, though.
Yes.
For later.
Well,
but that we'll get to
right.
that.
Right. So it wasn't until I retired in December. Mm-hmm. I was on 4 months of leave because I had saved up a lot of leave. Mm-hmm. January came and it was our youngest daughter's birthday. February, she was hit and killed and by a drunk driver. She just turned 21. So,
I'm so sorry.
We get through that, sort of. We're still working on it. And April is when I retire, April 17. And then I get diagnosis for the first cancer. A lot more to this story.
Oh my goodness, you've been through so much.
Yeah, but it's. I tell this now and I share this now because the outcome and where I'm at now is so powerful and so just unbelievable to me that
yeah.
it's so important to share my entire journey now. That it's not just the MST coming forward, it's everything.
Sure.
So April 2nd was my first appointment at the VA. I was 100% retired. I had no repercussions. I had no fears of somebody coming after me. Disputing any claims or anything like that.
And you let it all out.
Yeah. So that poor lady at Woman's Clinic, she got a lot. So I walk in and she's like, okay, tell me what's going on. And I was like, here's everything. And then, oh, by the way, I need some help because my daughter was just killed, our youngest. And I said, oh, and MST, I had two experiences. She's looking through the files for all the MST stuff. And I said, you won't find it. So I have four records. I said, you won't find anything. Not a single word saying MST. I said, you'll see all the trauma. You'll see all the medical stuff, but you won't see MST.
Right, because you didn't tell them.
No.
And now you're gonna. Now you did.
Yeah, now I am.
So
she got me to the right places. She got me to
yeah.
the amazing therapies. And all these different therapies, they all had their points and places. You know, I would do mindfulness.
Sure.
I did the breath works, the yoga. I went to many different ones. And then I got to Warrior Renew.
And it's a good one.
It took a while for her to convince me to do Warrior Renew because yeah. the way they treat us in the military is we're pitted against each other. We're pitted for how we look, how we talk, how we act, the rank we have. It's so much competition. It's no support. There's just absolutely no support for women in the military, for each other. And it's very difficult to open up to somebody to tell
sure.
them you're struggling, let alone show weakness. You're not allowed to show weakness. You will get eaten alive. You can show anger. That's it. Mm-hmm. Happy birthday. Oh, I'm so angry. I'm happy birthday. I'm so old. Happy birthday. Everything's anger. So yeah, when I got to Warrior Renew, that was a hard program because there's no way I'm going in with a bunch of other women. Mm-hmm. who want to say that they've had an experience for whatever.
Because heaven forbid they'd be supportive of you. You're not used to that. You do get certain things ingrained and beat into you.
Absolutely.
In the military. I'm a veteran, so
I
understand and I know. I haven't been what you've been through, but I know the culture very well.
And it's difficult, especially when you're in a man's job in the beginning, because they forced women in these jobs without support. They didn't have the gear to fit. They didn't have a bathroom, didn't have bedrooms.
So I'm hoping now that since you've been through treatment, and it sounds like a lot. Sounds like you've tapped into a lot of our wonderful resources that we have here. I hope that you're still not feeling like it's your fault, because you've said that a few times.
No, I'm so past that. It is not my fault. It's not my shame. It's not me. That's something that happened to me, but that's not who defines me.
That's not who you are.
No. It's just like, I fell down a cliff, you know, a couple years ago. Whatever. That's just an event that happened.
Right.
It doesn't define me. It doesn't say I'm clumsy all the time. That's just something that happens to me. It doesn't mean that I carry that shame anymore. And that has taken a long time. A long time to get there.
This probably makes you very happy, Elizabeth. Oh, yeah. I know that you're not her therapist, but I would imagine listening to her story that you're...
I think anybody listening, veteran or civilian, can feel the power behind what you're saying, Dawn. And I imagine there's a little bit of an out-of-body experience as you're sitting here recounting all of that. But observing your body language has just been moving. Like, I am almost in tears watching the weight of everything that you described, all of your trauma. And then the moment that you talked about, you know, what was it, August 2nd?
Yeah.
August 2nd, it just, your face lit up and your shoulders came back and this like relief just came over you. I can only imagine what that must have been like to be able to say MST.
Yeah.
And to be able to say, you know, what happened to your daughter and to have somebody listen to you. And I heard you say, that poor women's health provider. No, you gave her a gift.
I'm glad you said that because I'm like, trust me, she probably remembers you and you're the very reason she's here doing what she does.
Yeah. It's, our work is so gratifying, you know, and as a psychologist, being able to sit on the other end of a person who's never been able to get the help and support that they needed, and they give you the opportunity to provide that and provide avenues for change, it is the reason that we do what we do, and then we stick with it is for people like you. And the story that you're telling is the veteran story, right? It's never just one thing. It's not just, hey, I had a perfect, wonderful life my whole life before and after this one single event. A lot of times there is childhood trauma or pre-military trauma or stressors, those chronic stressors that might not, you know, be as acute as a trauma, but that still are very impactful. And then there can be military trauma, and sometimes that is in the form of combat. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's in the form of sexual assault by a superior officer or something like that. But then also sometimes it's, you know, I was out with some friends and, you know, I was assaulted, or somebody tried to push me into their car and take advantage of me. It doesn't have to be in the line of duty for it to be a trauma or for it to be something that you can get help for at the VA, which is really important. And then all these things that you're talking about, the health things that happen after a trauma when you're not facing it, it reminds me of, you know, a imagery that I give to a lot of veterans is that trauma can be like having a little kid. And if you've got kids, you know that when they're trying to get your attention, it can start off small, right? Like, hey, 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 right? And they might yank on your sleeve a little bit, maybe, you know, crawl on top of you. And if you kick them off for long enough, right, they might make a little bit of noise, but then eventually they kind of go away and you're like, okay, whew, taken care of. But then after a while, you like hear something in the back room and you go to open the door and there's this huge mess and you've got this kid in there with like diaper cream in their hair and they've drawn on the walls stuff everywhere. And it's like, oh gosh, what do I do now? And the tendency is to want to just shut the door and say, I can't deal with this. Mm-hmm. Therapy, it says, well, let's do it. Let's do it together. Let's get in there and let's clean this stuff up. Let's organize it. Let's put it in places that make sense and learn how to look at this kid in the eyes, tap it on the head and say, hey, I see you. And I've got this other stuff to do, right? Mm-hmm. Doing trauma treatment doesn't mean that you have to be zoned in on what happened all of the time.
Sure.
We want people to be able to live their lives. It means that when it does come up and when this little kid's pulling on your sleeve saying, hey, pay me attention, you know how to look at it and say, hey, I see you. and I'm going to find some space later to sit down and play, right? And it's not fun. It's not playing. Right. But, you know, that's kind of the way that we look at it sometimes. So when it's in that back room, that's where all the medical things end up coming out. And you're like, why do I feel like this? And that goes for anybody who's listening who thinks they might be struggling with PTSD. If there's things where you're like, oh, I don't know why I'm so irritated all the time. Or I don't know why I'm feeling so fatigued. I don't know why I can't concentrate at work. There's usually a reason, right? And if we're still long enough to really reflect on what that reason might be, or if we're willing to open up to another person to help explore what that reason might be, the opportunity for change and for help is just, it's endless, really.
So what's the first step? Someone's listening and they're like, I'm going to do it. Sold. Mm-hmm. I need some help. What would you recommend as a veteran? What would you recommend as a psychologist? I know we have some names and some extensions here that we'll definitely give out. But, I mean, really, what is the first step to, you know, garner that courage and walk through the door and say what you said on August 2nd?
For me, it's just I needed some help. I just got to the point.
Yeah.
Got to the bottom. And I just had to make a phone call. I had to do it for me, for my family. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's hard. It is so hard. It's so many ups and downs.
You have to do the work.
Yeah, it is. It's not just one program. I mean, Warrior Renew was amazing to get me to start interacting with people and to start working again and to just really open up and trust other women who are going through this and support. And I still keep in touch with those ladies, and it's been over 2 years.
That's great.
And we check in on each other. How are you today? What's going on? The first step is just to make the phone call.
Just like the military bond that you were looking for
initially. Absolutely. Yeah, I have it now after retirement.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So should we talk about how folks take that first step? I know that we don't have our open hours right now that we typically have in Building 16 for open intake for PTSD because of COVID-19. Hopefully that changes soon and we can start seeing more faces around here. But for now, our program director for PTSD is Dr. Steve Allen, and I've known Steve for over a decade, and he's amazing. And he's given up his phone number, so we're gonna give it out. 801-582-1565. That is the main hospital number, 801-582-1565. And his extension is 2390. Again, that's Steve Allen, and the extension is 2390. Before we go, let's talk about, because we're heading into July. Actually, by the time you're probably listening to this, 4th of July will be over, but we have Pioneer Day coming up. So can we talk a little bit about fireworks and post-traumatic stress? I don't think people realize the impact that it has on veterans.
Yeah, so this is something that comes up every year as we get close to July. I start feeling anxiety knowing that my veterans are starting to feel anxiety for multiple reasons. So fireworks are a big part of it. Unexpected noises are a really big trigger for people with PTSD, regardless of the type of trauma. Okay, and that might sound surprising, but one of the things about PTSD is that it generalizes. It spreads out to affect many different aspects of your life. And so even if at the time of the trauma there wasn't a big loud boom, right? It wasn't a bomb. Big, loud, unexpected noises can trigger PTSD symptoms for people. It can trigger a lot of anxiety and physical reactions. So, you know, the 4th of July, a lot of veterans are able to manage symptoms on the 4th of July because they know that it's coming.
What do they do? What should they do?
Well, you know, unfortunately, a lot of them are left saying, I have to go sit in a room inside, I have to put on earmuffs, or they go, you know, out, they go camping, they try to get somewhere where there's not going to be a ton of noise from the fireworks. They certainly don't go and, you know, go to a big viewing party where there's going to be a bunch of people.
Sure.
You know, and it can be really tough. I think when veterans are in treatment, we might try to set them up with a plan for exposing themselves to fireworks, right? Being able to learn that just because my body feels really anxious or just because there is this thing that's going on externally does not mean that I'm actually in danger. But for somebody who's not in treatment, mm-hmm. they might not have that same type of support. And so for them, it's about like getting somewhere that's not going to happen. On the 4th of July, I think veterans are able to know what's coming. I think it's the in-between time that can be the most stressful, is that, like, now it's the 10th of July.
We have fireworks going all summer, frankly.
Random
really
times.
Do.
Even sometimes when it's not dark out. And so I've noticed, you know, my dog, he's afraid of fireworks big time. He doesn't know what's going on. And he will start to get anxious when the sun goes down. And I've kind of mentioned this to some of my veterans, and they're like, yeah, same, actually. Now, like, into August, as the sun's going down, I'll start to feel anxious because I know that it could happen. And it's that unknown, I think, that really gets to people. So on the 4th of July, and here in Utah, the 24th of July might be a little bit more palatable because they know what's coming. But it's the in-between time. So if you're listening to this and you're somebody who likes to go shoot off fireworks at dusk on the 10th of July or just randomly in between, consider saving your fireworks until next year. Consider learning about your neighbors and who's around you and who might be affected by that, because it really can be extremely distressing to folks. And I think the unexpected nature is really a huge part of it.
Dr. Elizabeth Scott, she's a psychologist here with us at the VA Salt Lake City Healthcare System. She's on the PTSD team. Thank you so much for what you do.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed meeting you and talking to you. And now I know you're so good, I'm going to invite you back. So there's that.
Anytime.
Yes. And Dawn, I'm so glad you got your life back.
I not only got my life back, I finished my master's degree. I did my internship.
Wow.
I have a job now with the Utah State Health Department working COVID, and I've been doing that for 9 months, and I lead a team of 15, 20 people. So, yeah, my therapy and my work has really paid off.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
You're a great spokesperson and inspiration and role model. So whenever you want to tell your story, you call me.
Thank you.
Okay?
Appreciate
it. It's very nice to meet you. Thank you both for joining us today, and thanks for tuning in to Upholding Valor. Stay safe, take care of each other, and be kind. This is Jill Atwood. I'm a VA employee, Army veteran, and veteran of Desert Storm, and this is very personal to me. There is no greater mission than to serve and fight for those who fought for us. Thanks for listening, and thanks for caring. If you enjoyed our podcast, please subscribe or rate us, or better yet, tell a vet and tell a friend to tune in by texting veterans to 57500 or go to kslpodcast.com/veterans. VA is honored to serve you. Talk to you next time.